let's stop rustling paper, let's stop splashing bits of her anatomy against the desk, let's stop banging things. It's time to get on with the serious business of recording the Tux Radar podcast, series 4, episode 22. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
I'm Ben Everard.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this marvellous instalment, we have news. We have discoveries of the week or fortnight. We have rants and raves, speak your brains, an open ballot. And maybe one last thing, if we can think of anything.
And are we going to do rants and raves? I'm getting really bored by that.
You could rant about rants and raves, about how boring it is.
Okay.
Thereby.
I can do that.
Twisting the space-time polarity.
Just adds hate to the world. It's filled with too much hate already.
Okay, let's just rave then.
Sorry, can I just apologise? I'm coming completely unprepared. I left my podcast notes in the...
We had to leave the office because there was a fire alarm.
Yeah. So
there you go.
Yeah, we had to leave the office. It was raining outside.
Nobody cares. It's Thanksgiving for Americans.
Huh?
Is it tomorrow or today?
It's today, I think.
Isn't it Thursday?
It's today.
Yeah.
I googled it.
All right.
And so Google's writing so many things. Paedophiles and Thanksgiving.
So, if you like the sound of that and would like to... And if you'd like to... If you'd like to subscribe to a paper version, you can do so at tinyurl.com/LXFOffer1. There's an extra special Christmas offer. Shorten URL. It's 84 pounds 50, is that right? Oh no, sorry. £51.92 for a year is the cheap subscription thing. And the magazine, which is Linux format, features less Americophobia and nonsense, and more Linux, and sometimes a bit of BSD as well.
Although we get complaints when we do too much BSD.
But we also get praise.
That's true.
In equal measure, I think. We get complaints when we do anything. No one will complain about this podcast. So, obligatory racism. Yes. That, it must be time for the news.
So, in the news this fortnight... the Linux format team is now supporting a number of hirsute appendages on our upper lips.
Oh, I hadn't noticed.
Yeah. I see.
That's because we're just so naturally hairy all the time.
Yeah, it's difficult to tell.
In the aid of looking awesome, over half your Linux format writers are supporting moustaches, which is just about the only interesting thing to happen in the office this week.
Yeah, apart from the fire alarm. Yours looks awesome, Ben.
Mine always looks awesome.
Yours is the same colour as the hair on your head, which is great.
I think that's quite common for moustaches. I'm no expert, but...
I did read that, and it's kind of true of your moustache, Andrew, that if you've got a recessive ginger gene, then it's more likely to be revealed in your moustache than in the head on your the hair on your head.
Stealth ginger.
I'm thinking Ben actually looks a little bit like General Custer.
Yes, he does.
I have no idea what General Custer looks like.
Riding hard across the plains.
Yeah.
The big curly moustache. I don't know if he had ginger hair or not, though.
Chasing the Indians.
Probably not.
Wasn't he blonde?
No genocide.
How does that convert into money? The moustaches.
Because it's all for sponsors. Charity. We should provide a link to some sort of sponsorage. Yes. Sponsorage.
So have you both got pages for that or something?
No, I'm not going around. I just thought I'd look cool.
Okay, well, if you send me a link, I'll put it in the notes.
Yeah. It is. Obviously, all joking aside, we do look seriously sexy. And it is for a relatively good cause, I suppose, if you think that...
Andrew's vanity is a good cause.
Yeah. Funding for male-specific cancers is really atrociously low. We should spend more money on looking after people because people are what make the world go round.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so moving on to more Linux-related news. Linux Mint 14 has been released this week. It's Nadia. The default version of Mate and Cinnamon has been released. For other versions, you'll have to wait probably another few weeks. Has anyone tried it?
Nope.
No, but
sadly,
I know it's awesome.
You just know, you can feel it in your soul.
I can feel it in my moustache. It's tingling.
Yeah.
Have you tried it, Ben?
I haven't actually. I was going to give it a go next week when I put the DVD together. But yeah, just from the look at the release notes, it seems like it's sort of an incremental update. There's no major big features. The software manager's got some tweaks. The display manager's got some tweaks. It all looks a little bit better, but nothing big.
Well, you know, it works.
Yeah.
It's a great distribution, the most popular distribution on DistroWatch.
Yeah.
So don't change it.
Yeah, if it's not broken,
although I still have a complaint about it.
Yeah?
It needs that sort of facility that you can upgrade with that, with a new release. If you have a
it should
release.
Work.
No, but that's a feature of Mint that he's chosen not to include that.
Oh, I want that.
But has he?
Yeah, but it says...
Oh, I didn't know.
It says in the... somewhere on the site, it just says if you want to upgrade, don't bother. As long as you're happy with what you've got.
Oh, right. So
there is no need to be chasing the latest.
I just thought
version.
You could do an apt-get dist upgrade or something.
Oh, I don't think so. Or at least not in the Ubuntu version, maybe in the Debian version.
I need to spend some time in Mint, obviously.
I believe the Debian's a rolling update, so you just install it once and keep going.
Which is pretty much what I did with my non-rolling updates, and I've still got Ubuntu 10.04 lying about somewhere. And it still works. It's still great.
Yeah, well, I've got SUSE 12.02, and that doesn't work. So you're doing better than me.
You're revving the engine too hard.
Possibly. Graham, I believe you know more about that.
Thanks to a listener called Paul Gideon Dan. We've mentioned him before. But anyway, he sent me the news that a KDE contributor, Daniel Nicoletti, he was arrested on his way to a conference in Munich. Rather sad circumstances, I think, surrounding the death of his daughter in a car crash. But the important thing is actually that the KDE community did a fantastic job of coming together and donating money to help pay for lawyers, help pay for his wife to fly out to Munich to arrange his defense and get him back home to Brazil, I think, quickly, which they have been able to do over the last couple of weeks. It was looking likely he might have to spend up to 6 months in Germany. So really just wanted to highlight a fantastic example of people coming together and helping a KDE contributor. That's all.
Cool. Yeah. So next on the item is future news. News that hasn't even happened yet. That's how on the ball we are.
The newest of all news.
The newest of all news. OpenStreetMap, it's a fantastic project to obviously get open mapping data out there. It's starting a hackathon tomorrow. The idea is to get people more involved in editing the data. And the two things they really want to focus on is obviously increasing coverage in patchy areas, but also to increase the sort of links into points of interest. So linking Wikipedia articles to the points they're relevant to, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want to contribute to open source and been unsure how to do it, that's an excellent way to get started.
It's a fantastic project. It's something we should make more of. I know we do cover it, but so do you know what the best way of contributing is? Can you simply walk around with your Android phone and OpenStreetMap running and put in new points of interest?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do. I mean, it's all built off data, and that data comes from a lot of different things. There's aerial photographs, but also a huge source is just routes that people have traced on their GPS devices, mobile phones, et cetera, et cetera. So you can use that to upgrade the accuracy of the route you went. And also the height information is really useful for mobile phones.
Right. So it really is a great way for non-technical people to contribute to an important project.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and just things like I said, linking in the points of interest. If you know an area well, that's it's an easy win just to go this site, this site, this site. The data's already there, Wikipedia, et cetera, have huge amounts of data about stuff. You just need to tell it where it's where it is.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
This week's also brought a new round of discussions on the top-level domains. These are the last bit of the domain name on the internet, so tuxradar.com. The .com's a top-level domain. The organization that organized them all has been in the process of rolling out a much wider range of them, and a load of governments have been able to register their complaint against some of the proposed ones, and turns out that Australia, bizarrely, is the most picky, with over 200 complaints against top-level domains that were suggested, including .wtf and .sucks. He knew Australia was the upholder of the world's morals.
Wow. But...
I read that very carefully to make sure it wasn't Austria. Because frankly, it seems a much more Austrian thing.
It's weird, because there's been this problem with getting the XXX domain.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of ignore it if it offends you, can't you? You're not going to ever be presented with it.
I mean, that's part of the advantage of it in many ways, because yeah. if that domain offends you, you know...
It's so easy to block it off.
Yeah, without that domain, it could be anywhere. Yeah.
I mean, girlswithguns.com, you don't know what you're going to get, but if it's girlswithguns.xxx, you know to avoid it.
Isn't that exactly. one of Gary's sites?
Have we put in a registration for tuxradar.xxx?
God, now that really is a horrific thought.
What a slash fan fiction.
Oh, the Linux format Christmas calendar.
On the other hand, tuxradar.wtf could be quite a good one.
Yeah, you're right.
As we try and scrub that image from our mind, move on to the next item. Some people have got Silverlight running on Linux. This might not be the biggest news, but I was quite impressed. It's one of the things I've been meaning to try and do for months and months and months, is get Silverlight working on Linux through Wine. And I kept putting off and I kept putting off, and now someone else has done it, which is awesome. They've put instructions on how to do it on Ubuntu and I think some other things as well, which means I can now watch TV without getting out of bed. Woo!
Excellent. Obesity, here we come.
Yes.
That is cool. I mean, they've probably had to reverse engineer parts of the protocol, I guess. I mean, I'm thinking that Silverlight must be quite locked down because everybody uses it for encrypted video or for authenticated video, and kind of making that work on a platform that isn't certified or ratified by the Silverlight application must be quite tricky.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't looked into the technical details yet, but no. I certainly will be doing in the next few days.
Hopefully Silverlight's days are numbered. I mean, that seems to be the way Microsoft has been going.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, the biggest thing I've had issues with is videos online, and just hopefully...
Yeah.
I actually don't know if HTML5 supports encrypted videos or how it handles that.
No, I don't know, but it's something that they should address, because obviously there's a demand for it.
Yeah, and hopefully we can get rid of all this Flash and Silverlight out of videos online and just use a nice standard compliance thing that works everywhere.
Yeah.
Next, Red Hat's invested in TenGen, which is a creator of MongoDB, which is... Actually, I'll be coming onto it in my discoveries of the week. If you're not familiar with it, it's a database that doesn't use SQL. It's a simple answer. And it just shows how much Red Hat's investing in the new technology and sort of to help it get out there and become more widely used.
How much have they invested in it?
Lots.
I think it was Red Hat and Intel together invested 10 million. But I'd have to check that. I can't remember.
Lots. Small change for Red Hat, though.
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah, so moving on from Earth-related news to out-of-Earth-related news.
Nice link.
Yeah.
We're getting more like Top Gear every episode.
That's what I aim for. I want to be the Jeremy Clarkson of Linux.
I've already established that you're the James May.
All you have to do is to install the Mexican ambassador. That's all you have to do.
Really,
to
if Graham doesn't cut out the first part of this podcast, I think we'll insult a lot of ambassadors.
Sorry, Ben.
So in extraterrestrial-related news, NASA has discovered aliens. Or so it was reported in today's Metro anyway. NASA's announced it's made some massive discovery, but it's not going to tell us what it is yet. But it's one for the history books, to use their words.
So, I mean, I saw the news yesterday that they'd found something, but they weren't going to say.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what it was going to be, whether they'd found evidence of...
Water.
Water. But, yeah.
We can only speculate.
Absorb in the moon.
Yeah.
Thargoids.
Middle Earth.
they find the end wives.
And we don't go there.
The Metro newspaper is owned by the Daily Mail, isn't it?
It reads like it is.
Yeah. It is.
So, so they could be wrong.
Does Daily Mail have a monopoly on being wrong?
Well, quite a lot of the time they're right, but they don't really have any compunction about, you know, guessing about what might something might be.
No. That Amanda Knox trial verdict thing, that was unbelievable. They had two versions written and they put up the wrong version. They misunderstood the judge in the trial.
So was she innocent?
Yeah. But they put up a story, they put up the guilty story with, you know, she held her head in her hands and sobbed, she was led away, all things that hadn't happened.
I did see usefully on the Daily Mail website that they've got a list of most popular toys from Amazon and where you can buy them cheaper in shops in the UK that do pay corporation tax.
Well, that's good.
So, yeah.
So, coming back down to earth. I've got this news thing down.
It's taken 9 months.
It's taken 9 months. Well, I've only been doing the news for maybe three.
Sorry, you're right.
Yeah. I'm not that slow. in our fortnightly roundup of patent news, it hasn't been that busier a fortnight in patent news this time, but Jellybean is not going to be part of the... of Apple's case against Samsung, like we said it might be. The judge has pointed out that's clearly ridiculous.
Oh, that's good.
So well done, judges in America.
Excellent.
Yeah. You may have heard that HTC and Apple had a cross-licensing patent arrangement all in the works. It meant that they wouldn't sue each other, but they kept all the details pretty hush-hush. This is pretty common in the patent world. A lot of big companies have agreements like this, and they like to keep them very secret. But this time we're going to find out what it is, because the judge in the Samsung against Apple case has ruled that Apple have to tell Samsung and the court what this agreement is, because it's relevant to the terms of the case. Because the reason Apple was able to block Samsung's products is because it said it would never license its patents. They're too important for money and words and everything else.
Our souls.
Yes. And if they're licensing them to HTC, it's obviously not more important than money in the world and everything else. So, that's what that's about. So we're going to find out. We haven't found out yet, but we will do soon.
Apple.
And we're just waiting at the moment for a ruling on the Motorola versus Microsoft case, which is to do with fair and reasonable, non-discriminatory licensing amounts of patents. And we'll bring you more news on that, hopefully next fortnight.
Exciting.
And the final update is in the Secure Boot saga, which has been dragging its heels through the Linux world and messing everything up that used to work. In a bizarre turn of events, some engineers from Fedora found a Lenovo laptop that would only boot either Windows or Red Hat. When you go to boot, each bootloader, I don't know what they're called in UEFI in Secure Boot, but we'll call them bootloaders, gives itself a name. So Windows is one, you know, macOS, whatever would be one. Red Hat obviously has its own. And they couldn't get Fedora to boot on this Lenovo laptop. And they sort of dug through everything and looked through all the firmware and all that. And they found that it was actually checking for the name that this bootloader was identifying it by. And if it wasn't Windows or Red Hat, it kicked it out and said it wasn't valid.
So Ubuntu could call their distribution Red Hat and it would boot,
yeah,
in theory.
I don't know exactly the... Yeah,
there's some key stuff as well.
Yeah. So there's some bizarre
That's
stuff.
So wrong.
It's wrong, and it's also against the Secure Boot specifications.
Oh, cool.
So
it could be a hack, I suppose. They just needed something to work, so they put the names in.
That pretty much looks like what it was. But yeah, it just shows what a mess this is.
You know?
It's not as simple as that. And in even more bad news and how much of a mess this thing is, Microsoft, it's unfair to say it's refusing to sign the Shim bootloader from the Linux Foundation, but it keeps rejecting it. Or they won't, they haven't, it's been submitted a number of times and it hasn't been authorized by Microsoft to be signed.
But I thought one of the things with this was that Microsoft weren't going to be the gatekeeper to certification, that it was going to be whoever it was.
VeriSign.
Yeah, VeriSign.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, but it sort of goes through Microsoft, and
this is exactly what we were worried about, this is what everybody promised wouldn't happen.
Yeah, and in the even worse news, Microsoft has said flat out now that the bootloader, these Shim bootloaders or whatever form bootloaders that get signed, they won't sign any code that's under GPL version 3.
Is Grub 2 under GPR 3?
I don't know.
There are bootloaders out there, aren't there? There's Lilo and...
There are other bootloaders, and it would be relatively simple to write a shim bootloader and license it under NETM. But the fact that they now seem to have some big right to claim what license we should use on our computers seems ridiculous. Now, if you want to use GPL Ver 3 for political reasons, the hardware manufacturers, and certainly not a software manufacturer creating a completely unrelated piece of software, should not be able to tell you whether you can or you can't. And this is just, the secure boot fiasco just seems to be getting worse and worse.
Yeah. Hopefully it will reach a pressure point where manufacturers will realize that they can't completely close off people installing Linux or other operating systems on their hardware, so they'll make it relatively easy for people to bypass the secure boot system.
Yeah, I mean...
That could be the only good thing.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, for the secure boot, you do have to be able to bypass it for it to be in the specification.
Right.
As yet, we haven't been able to get our own hands on some hardware, so we can't... any hands-on news, but we will try to in the coming weeks.
I just, before we finish news, I just want to I went to the Qt developers conference in Berlin last week. There's a news item about it in the issue of the magazine we've just sent to the printers, 166, so I won't talk too much about it, other than Qt I think is in a much stronger position than it was with Nokia, mainly because they're going to be able to develop it for Android and iOS and, well, BlackBerry 10 as well. But it means that Qt could be like this fantastic cross-platform smartphone development environment, also important on the Linux desktop. But also I want to thank Jan for the evening we had in the beer hall and for giving me a beer token at the Qt Developers Conference when I forgot them all. So we had a good night. That's it.
And that brings us to the end of the news.
That should bring us to the halfway reminder, really, shouldn't it?
I think so. Excellent news section, Ben.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's really good.
You know what? I sort of trust Ben more now that he's got...
What, more than John?
Hang on. I trust Ben more than I used to trust Ben because he's got that sort of manly...
Yeah.
Look, he's twirling it now. Just the corner.
It does suit him.
It's like real authority, real gravity to his words.
Yeah.
I trust him. But this is the halfway reminder still to come. We have discoveries of the week. Maybe rants and raves if we can...
Oh, let's cut rants and raves.
We're still to come. We have discovery of the week, speak your brains, and an open ballot.
Right, so it's discovery of the week. I've got a couple of great discoveries, which is really exciting for me. I remembered the one that was so obvious.
Hey!
Does anyone else want to go first?
I've got a discovery or two. I could... talk about for a bit.
Yeah,
why not? Discoveries. I wrote it down somewhere. Here we go. Yes, discovery number one. If you borrow £100 for a week from wonka.com, it costs you £12.78. Discovery number two. If you borrow £400 for 31 days from wonka.com, it costs you £129.48.
And that's an APR of 4,224%?
Yeah, that's right. It's about that. I know this because Wonga.com have been advertising on TuxRadar, so this may not come as a surprise to many people listening. All I can say really is that I'm very sorry. We don't have any control over the ads that go on there.
Please be careful.
Be careful with your money. You know, don't go wasting it on loan sharks and stuff. And the other discovery, Beers of Europe. Google it. It's awesome. They also have beers from Africa and Asia and America. So, I don't know, maybe Beers of the World was taken. So, but if there was a top level, if there was like .wtf or .lol or something.
.beer.
.booze.
Yeah.
Like they should be right in there.
.sex, drugs and rock and roll.
Australians would ban that. Also have a look on Small Football World?
Small Football World.
.wordpress.com,
I think.
That sounds like the right one, yes. That's that'll be just a little treat for Gary.
Yeah.
He's blogging away as
it contains offensive language, so don't Don't go there if you're easily offended, if you're Australian.
Yeah. such delicate flowers.
Yeah. Yes.
I really hope it wasn't Austrians now.
Those are my quasi discoveries. That's all.
Awesome.
Effie, you've got anything?
Not really. As I said before,
Effie's off to Mexico.
But yeah, I'm off to Mexico. So I came and prepared. I've been quite busy finishing the magazine. But I can give you an advice rather than a discovery.
Is it to do with Stanley knives?
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you're ever going to use a Stanley knife for any particular reason, whether it's, I don't know, DIY reasons or an artistic reason or whatever, don't use it when you're tired.
Mm, or drunk.
Both. Or drunk, tired and drunk. And upset.
Tired and emotional.
So, because you might end up going to casualty and emergencies and wait there for 3 hours just for them to, I don't know, to treat you in 15 minutes. So, yeah, don't do that, please. Especially when it's something related to Harry Potter. So don't do that. And that's it.
Effie was carving wands for a children's birthday party. And while this was at 11 o'clock at night, and he slipped with the knife that he was using to carve a wand and cut his finger and had to go to emergency at the hospital. It looks pretty bad in the bandage.
It looked worse.
Yeah.
When it happened, it looked like a Quentin Tarantino's film scene, blood splashing all over the place, landing in the soup. The milk was covered in blood. All the kitchen floor was painted with red. And my wife didn't care at that point until she thought it was serious, and then she just got a little bandage and wrapped it up.
Shipped you off to hospital.
Shipped you off to hospital. Well, she had to clean all the mess that I left there. So, yeah, don't use Stanley knives when you're tired.
Did the blood get on any of the wands?
The last one, yeah. The one that
will make it more powerful, though.
yeah, I was saying.
It'll be imbued with special Mexicanness.
Yeah.
I think that was a sign, really. I think.
That'll be the one to destroy Voldemort.
So when the zombie apocalypse comes, we're all around to Effie's house to shelter behind his magical power.
Back off, creature of death from hell. Yeah. Anyway, that's it. That was my advice of the week.
That's a pretty good discovery.
Yeah, I've been discovering a few things as well. I've been discovering that Effie shouldn't mess with powers beyond his ken.
I mentioned that to my wife. She didn't care. She made me do it.
There's a few more things I've discovered that, frankly, I should have discovered a long time ago. There's been a few things on my list to do, and keep putting them off and putting off. And one of them is get around to learning Python. And I finally did that this week, actually, in applying for another job.
That's all right.
Oh, well, good luck.
Oh, I haven't got it.
That was quick.
Yeah.
Learn Python, apply for job. It's a failing play.
Forget Python.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's part of the application progress. So there's this sort of test, and it was like, it's to write a web scraper. So you put in a domain, it'll pull off the website and all the links between the sites on that and sort of display it nicely. And part of it said, do this in a modern language. And I said, well, what do I know? So the thing I program most in is C, and there's no way in which C is modern. So, next one I know most is Bash. And it's like, well, that's stretching it really to call shell scripting modern. The one I know sort of third best is Java, which, although I consider it modern, isn't really anymore. So it's like, none of these really do it. So I get around to learning Python. So I sort of sat down and said, well, that'll take a little while. Within 3 hours, I was able to learn the language and complete this exercise, which I thought was really impressive. And it was just so fast coding in it, so much quicker than anything I'd done before. It just, bash, it worked.
Yeah, so, yeah.
If you don't know Python now, you should learn it. It's really easy to do and really powerful. And it may get you another job, but it may not. Yeah, and secondly, that sort of spurred me on to sort of learn some more stuff that I've been putting off. And so I've been playing around with MongoDB, which is one of the NoSQL databases, because I've done quite a bit with databasing in SQL. And I've never really understood how NoSQL worked. And to be honest, I still don't quite get why it's better. But there are some real advantages to it. Basically, you have everything split up into collections rather than tables. And in a collection, you can just put a load of anything. They don't have to form a particular schema or anything like that. They're just stuff with information. But it's got some really powerful analytical functions, what they call MapReduce one, which is kind of like the group by and aggregate functions in SQL, but you can just script them in JavaScript to do almost anything, and it's just really quick to create really powerful queries. So those are my two discoveries.
Excellent. That kind of partly links to one of my discoveries, which was it is an Amiga emulator called FS-UAE. I recently got, last weekend in fact, got my old Amiga to work, and this prompted me to try getting stuff running on an emulator. And the emulator landscape hasn't really changed much. UAE it's continued to be developed, and WinUAE specifically on the Windows version is excellent, but on Linux there isn't that much development. FSUAE is actually a build of WinUAE with its own front end, and it's got a really nice user interface. You can switch disks in a nice way while you're running the Amiga games. And the front end's written in Python, and I was using the latest development version, and there was a problem with it, mainly to do with a Unicode character being returned when it searched for joysticks, which causes it to crash. And I don't know Python that well either, but it didn't take me long to actually delve into the thousands of lines of source code and find the bit that was responsible for it and change it. Which is a great thing about Python, great thing about the fact that it's just a scripted language and you don't have to do anything else other than just change the lines that it's doing. So that's FSUAE is brilliant. Version 2.01 has just been released. Version 2 was only released a couple of months ago. And the other one is a server software called TV Head End, which I recently got running on Raspberry Pi. Although I've taken it off there now, it's basically the same as a backend in MythTV. So it's responsible for scheduling digital television recordings through a DVB device. Now Linux has great support for DVB devices now, both satellite and terrestrial. There's a load of them that you can just plug in and they'll work. You use TV Head End to scan for the channels, use XML TV to link that to program data if you can't get it from anywhere else. And then TV Head End will sit there in the background, happily recording the raw streams to the hard drive, or you can stream live TV as well. And the very latest beta version of XBMC, the multimedia front end that used to run on an Xbox, links directly with via a plugin to TV Head End, turning it into a fully fledged PVR. So stick TV Head End on a Raspberry Pi or a low power NAS box, always running connected to your aerial, then run XBMC on your netbook or on your computer connected to the TV, and it makes an awesome combination. So brilliant. After years of MythTV, it's better. XBMC is looking so smooth, so accelerated. It's definitely easier to set up as well, and a really great system. I can't believe I hadn't tried it before. Definitely going to write on that in the future. That's my discoveries. And that is the discovery of the fortnight. That's Speak Your Brains. That's me.
Speak Your Brains.
Well, we've had two, which is really good. Well, it's better than nothing. Firstly, from James Erickson, he says, this is a short one, he's really telling us about Google Cloud Printing, which I didn't know about either. Ran into Google Cloud Printing the other day while messing around with Google Docs. Not exactly his words. In theory, this should allow anyone with a printer connected to a computer on a network to print from near anywhere so long as you have access. He doesn't need it himself, he said, but he thought he'd like to share the discovery with other people. So I went to this site. It looks like any computer connected to your browser you can set up to, and if you've got a printer connected to your computer, log into the Google Cloud account, your Google account, and you can print it from anywhere else logged into the same account, which is pretty cool. If you see what I mean? If you've got a house where the printer's upstairs and you're downstairs on the laptop, if they're both logged into the Google account and you've got Google Cloud Printing going, you can print out upstairs without any messing about.
So, sorry, it's got to be the same account?
I guess so, yeah. I've not actually tried it. And then a more serious one from Phil the Sheep. He said, it's the importance of being open. I have an N900, and though Mego does need some love and attention, it's still great in so many ways, and I haven't been tempted away to even the newest shiny Android phones. However, horror of horrors, recently the side switch, which locks and unlocks the screen, has become faulty, and sometimes the screen turns itself off and on in my pocket. So I thought that my wonderful time with this device had come to an end. I was, coincidentally, reading an article about building a joystick for the Raspberry Pi and interfacing with the GPIO pins to communicate with it. This gave me an idea. I opened up a shell on my N900, gained root access, and queried DMessage. After waiting for the screen to turn itself on and off, lo and behold, I could see rogue GPIO pin events that were generated by the faulty switch hardware, and one quick Google later, I found out how to disable input from that particular pin. This started me thinking, could I have done this on an Android device? Probably not, unless I had messed about and rooted it, probably voiding the warranty. The wondrous unsung N900 has a full shell out of the box, and a script to gain root access is available in the standard repositories. So you don't have to do anything to void your warranty, and the root access is merely an apt getaway. This means that though I haven't fixed the hardware problem, having full open access to my device means that I have the power to fix it from the software side myself. As I said, the importance of being open, something we seem to be losing with our mobile devices, which is rather sad. Very true.
Mm. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. I think Richard Stallman would completely agree with you. And I agree with you.
We asked
Stallman about open devices and stuff, didn't we?
Yeah. And
did he say, no, they're free devices?
He very often does, provided in very lucid answers that made a lot of sense and are very difficult to argue with. The trouble is that in Richard Stallman's world, we just wouldn't have smartphones. We'd all be using cash. And, it's just too convenient. Anyway, thanks, Phil, and thanks, James.
That brings us nicely to open ballots, which is, and because it's almost Christmas, how many podcasts have we got until Christmas? Have we got one?
Oh, it's probably two, but I don't know. We've got one, so 2 weeks will be early December.
Yeah. It's the 22nd now, so we should have another one around the 20th.
I'm just checking my calendar. So, I mean, it'd be good to do the last one at least in the pub like we did last year, because I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was good.
Mm.
So the next one will be on the 6th, and then the one after that is the 20th, which we could probably do just before we all go away for Christmas.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, so there'll be two more after this.
Okay. As this is the anti-penultimate podcast of the year, we thought we'd ask,
is this the year of Linux on the desktop? Again, for the millionth time. It's different this time, though, because we've got Chromebooks and new products from Samsung and Acer that use Linux. And also, because they seem to be doing it right this time, the old Chromebook didn't seem to be marketed all that heavily, but we've seen adverts on the telly for this one, and it's cheaper, and Linux on ARM is a lot better, and just everything is better this time.
Early reports have been the performance is really good. I've been surprised, because Ben and I were talking about this the other day, and I was very sceptical about wanting to use that as a laptop.
Yeah, well, the Chromebooks aren't all ARM. There are standalone ones as well. But yeah, I mean, obviously it depends what you're comparing to. It's a low-end laptop.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we say good performance, we mean
you're not building the kernel.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Phronix did a full test up on them and found them slightly quicker than sort of the Atoms.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Mind you, Atoms have been around for a few years.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's really the competitor for the ARM chips. Mm. And, from what I've heard from people actually using them for Chromos, it's actually really fast, really responsive. And I hear also if you put one of the other Linux distros on it, obviously it should work out the box because the drivers should be in the kernel tree, or at least available for Linux. And Ubuntu apparently runs it really well, which is impressive because Ubuntu doesn't run on my desktop really well anymore.
What was that frown, Effie?
No, I was about the Google Chrome laptops. do they have to be connected to the internet all the time to work?
Sense connected to the internet, but I think the way that it works is that you can use Google's applications offline.
Well, like Google Docs, for instance.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it makes a lot of sense.
So to get onto the openness of this open ballot, the realist penguin says, no, go buy a tablet. Terry71 makes the best point. Oh, no, I should say this at the end, really, if it's the best point.
I can cut okay. that.
Terry71 makes the point that I agree with most. Terry says, Linux took over my desktop about 6 years ago. Whether it takes over a significant number of non-industrial desktops is anyone's guess. Actually, that's not all that great a point. Sorry, Terry. Barbar, easy and familiar is what most users want, says Merely Jim. It is irrelevant, says Derek Eakins. Thanks for your input. Zelus says, don't make me laugh. Fractured, fragmented, and frequently broken features add to the flurry of feeble distributions out there, and I very much doubt it. That's a shame. You know what? I started putting these into order, but most people just don't really care.
No, no.
You know, there's some nice names. Rothgar says hello. Rothgar says, P.S., how do I become verified? Not verified.
I've no idea.
No, we should have found that out from Mike before he left, really.
I think there's a small login thing at the bottom of TuxRadar, but I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
The thing is that none of us could predict the way that the Linux desktop was going to evolve, and I think Linux is that kind of epitomized, because who'd have thought that Android, I mean, when you look at the computing market share, I think something like 40% of it is Android, of all the devices that you could consider computing devices. And that's just phenomenal. That if you look at a graph of that compared with Windows, for example, which is what we all used to worry about, you know, it's a massive success, but not in a way that any of us would have imagined. So, you know, that's the trouble with this question. The question doesn't address the kind of entropy in the computing environment that none of us can predict.
So do we consider Android tablets as part of Linux desktop environment?
That's a really good question, because we ask it ourselves when we're wondering about what to cover in the magazine. Because you could argue we feel quite antiquated by the fact that we're a Linux magazine. We don't cover that much Android.
I'm asking the question just because of, I remember probably this time last year, no one really gave a chance to Android tablets. I remember even probably just before that, before Mike left the magazine, he used to say Android is never going to take on, because it's always aimed just for mobile phones, for smartphones.
Yeah, yeah.
On a tablet, it seems almost ridiculous to even imagine that that's going to work on the market. And look at that now, 1 year later, 1.5 years later, the Android tablet market is sort of exploded. To the extent that I was listening to some, I took one of my daughters to school, and some of the mums dropping the kids to school, they were thinking about buying iPads or something related to that. And one of the mums said, well, don't buy an iPad. They're really expensive. Why don't you buy an Android tablet?
Yeah.
And sort of all the people around them, they got sort of interested, cool. and they were like, just, I was really tempted to get involved in the conversation, but I was too busy, right? So I just walked away. So, but it was just quite interesting to hear that at school, and also the teachers at school, they just think exactly the same. They don't buy iPad.
And if they said Linux instead, if it was just Linux instead of Android, then you'd kind of, even if it was exactly the same device, get a Linux tablet. You know, we'd all be sitting here rather smugly and going, it succeeded.
There you go.
Getting back to the specifics of
sorry, I thought I was helping you out there.
No.
Sorry.
I don't mean that's come across as an implied criticism. Refugee from Windows says, I suggest that the killer feature will be the support for ARM, that's the ARM chips, that Microsoft has got into too late. Microsoft has already sneaked its way, Android, sorry, has already sneaked its way into this market. Okay, it's not the desktop, but it has been said most users don't care. They just want it to work out of the box. We mentioned ARM before, didn't we? That's probably one of those good points. Sorry.
Yeah, so, see you in 2 weeks. I am Zimbo says, it can run run Ubuntu beautifully for $250. What not to love? Yep, great. I don't think, this is Jumper says, I don't think Chromebooks will conquer the world, but it might open people's eyes about alternatives to Windows and Mac. Chrome OS might be the gateway drug to other Linux OSs. Yeah, and let's say, message from Hiauj here. Message to Hiauj, sorry, you won the letter of the month for last issue. I'm really sorry I've not got back in touch with you. I will do as soon as we get back to the office.
His letters just must fit that box the best.
Is he the only one that writes? No, magazine?
We can resize the box now. We've learned how to do that. It's epic.
So you don't need me anymore. Is there any more jobs going on in that place that you were applying for? No.
Maybe if my Python was better. Maybe if I hadn't got stuck on lists, then I would have got that National Trust job.
Maybe if I didn't submit an application using a language I learned 3 hours earlier.
So that's the end. That is the end of the almost penultimate podcast of 2012.
And I'll be flying tomorrow.
Have a fantastic time, Effie. I hope you come back, just for our sakes. For your sake, obviously.
I've got responsibilities back here. I think I'm going to come back.
Have a tequila for us.
I will. Yeah. And a taco.
And a chimichanga. And we look forward to what your Mexican discovery will be in the next episode of the Tux Radar podcast in 2 weeks' time.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Galactic exclusive.
Not anymore.
No. Bye.
Adios. Bye.